My name is Kishore Chandiramani, and I welcome you all to this fifth in a series of six sessions on stress management. The topic for today's discussion is understanding stress and its management using the knowledge from psychoanalysis and philosophy. Within philosophy, I have placed greater emphasis on existentialism and stoicism. Historically, the treatment of mental illness has been the concern of a number of different fields, such as religion, philosophy, education, literature, law, and so on. And it was brought into the medical fold only about 100 years ago. The humanity has survived for more than 10,000 years, and psychiatry as a scientific discipline has existed only for less than 100 years. It may not be wise to dismiss the attempts of our forefathers in trying to understand the human mind and find solutions to the problem of psychological stress. Restricting our knowledge to only a scientific approach as we understand it now may be very limiting when it comes to the study of the mind, as science has not fully understood the human mind yet. Existentialism, which is a branch of philosophy, encourages clients to look at the core issues of human life and confront the inner pain rather than find escape into the distractions of the external world. Existentialism is about understanding the true nature of our inner being, our core existence, and the reality of the external world. And this can lead us to a realistic understanding of human life. We tend to view normal life in terms of fulfillment, having very loving and caring parents, supportive and loving spouse, healthy, clever and obedient children, successful career, good friends, and sufficient money to lead a comfortable life. Unfortunately, that is not about a normal or average human existence. Once we have achieved something, the expectation is that it will continue with us. Existentialism forces us to look within and understand the true nature of human being and our consciousness, that things are constantly changing for good or for bad. Nothing is stationary. Existentialism looks at the core issues such as meaning in relationships, being alone, separation, loss, death, free will, sense of responsibility, purpose and meaning in life, and sense of what is right and wrong. Existentialism doesn't avoid a discussion on the inevitable aspects of suffering. By a rough estimate, 1/3 of all human suffering is inevitable, which is linked to this constant change, separation, and loss, among other things. Whereas the rest 2/3 is there because we can't accept and are struggling to get that 1/3 out of our system. People who can accept this existential suffering are less likely to experience psychiatric symptoms. According to existentialism, psychiatric problems arise due to one's failure to come to terms with one's existential reality, which is common to humanity. That is, a struggle to find ultimate meaning in life, coping with unpredictable nature of life, anxiety of death, existential loneliness, conflict over choice, burden of responsibility, and free will. These negative aspects coexist with joys of life at the core of our being. But we are always trying to escape from this inner reality into the distractions of everyday life and thereby cut ourselves off from the inner joys as well. According to existentialism, everything exists against the background of nothingness or no-thingness, the state of deep anxiety and despair which sometimes arises in people for no apparent reason, is often caused by a sudden perception of nothing. This creates a sense of emptiness and insignificance. Existentialism reminds us that death is not something that will happen to us someday in remote future, but something that is happening every minute of our lives. Those of us who can't come to terms with this realization end up having clinical anxiety and depressive symptoms, which can just be a cover for the death anxiety. Depression has been viewed in existential therapy as a result of either one's inability to get properly engaged with the world or a result of losing of oneself into others. Clients with depression tend to indulge in regretful wallowing in past mistakes and misfortunes, or see themselves as victims of society. In therapy, they start exploring how they have allowed others to make decisions and control them. They come to a realization in therapy that others are not doing something to them and taking their control. They are instead responsible for their actions and choices. Existential therapy enables clients to examine the degree to which their behavior is being influenced by social and cultural conditioning. Some clients don't see meaning in life as their central concern. But when one starts examining the deeper reaches of the unconscious mind, they hit upon this core issue of human life. The issue gains prominence during midlife crisis, when one has achieved some material success and still feels unfulfilled. Finding a meaning in life can be an antidote to this type of stress. The knowledge that there is meaning in life helps one to survive very difficult conditions. Nietzsche said, quote, "He who has a why to live for can survive almost anyhow," unquote. He used the word amor fati, which literally means love for one's destiny, a willingness to embrace the future, which springs from an inner conviction that the future is going to be better than the present. We tend to draw strength more from the hope of a better life than from what we have already got. This hope can be very useful in coping with one's everyday stresses. However, having high hopes and high expectations can also result in problems. Depression can result from having a very high and unrealistic internal standards, that is, to be strong, loving, and good at all times, which results in depression when these standards don't match with the internal reality. Another philosopher, Viktor Frankl, who invented a form of therapy called logotherapy, said, "Live as if you are already living for the second time, and had acted for the first time as wrongly as you are going to act now. This invites us to imagine that the present can just be a repetition of the past. But now is the moment to change the direction, which requires high levels of alertness every moment. Logotherapy looks for meaning in life at three different levels. First, by creating a work or doing a deed. Second, experiencing something. And third, by the attitude we take towards suffering that is unavoidable. Heidegger, another existential philosopher, saw our relationship to others in the context of our basic insufficiency and warned against the danger of us being absorbed in the anonymous they. The mass of others that terrorizes and oppresses us. Clients with depression tend to retreat from others, which can worsen their depression. This detachment from others might be unhealthy, and therapy is about clients learning new ways of relating to people, which involves confronting their feeling of being overwhelmed. Sartre, another existential philosopher, has pointed out that our inability to grasp the ultimate essence in life is seen by many clients as their personal failure. They can find reassurance in the fact that it is in the true nature of things that a part of the mind does experience nothingness and meaninglessness of human life. And this feeling can sit alongside a feeling that there is an ultimate meaning in life. Clients begin to learn in therapy that creating their own meaning in life is a form of self-therapy, and this encourages them to take responsibility for their depression. Because of our romanticized notions of human life, we can't accept the reality of our existence and that of the external world. And this results in distortions in our perception of the reality. According to psychoanalysis, this distortion is achieved by means of use of different defense mechanisms such as denial, projection, displacement, intellectualization, rationalization, somatization, and so on. And psychiatric symptoms originate from these distortions. The distortion of reality means that we lose authenticity. The definition of authenticity is acting in a manner which is in keeping with one's inner realities. There are no false fronts. The distortion of reality can happen in two ways. First, by creating a false positive image of ourselves and a negative image of others. And this makes us stop seeing ourselves the way others see us. The other falsehood that can arise is that we become unmindful of who we are and shift our attention to what we have. These can be described as the being mode and the having mode. People are generally preoccupied with what they have, the house they live in, the car they drive, the jobs they have, their family members, and people they associate with. That is all left behind ultimately at the time of death. Whereas what goes with us, that is who we are, requires equal attention if not more. This is discussed in greater depth in the next session. With being mode, we are generally unaware of the depths of both positive and negative feelings. This unawareness is also a defense mechanism, as the mind is not yet ready to deal with the deeper issues. Therapy is about increasing one's coping abilities so that one can explore the deeper reaches of the mind. Sometimes therapy makes people more aware of the deeper human pain that they were unmindful of, and absorbing this pain into their psyche makes them better able to deal with the situations. Distortions of the reality can manifest in a number of different ways. A person who feels insignificant, that nobody wants to know him, is likely to create delusions of reference. Someone who suffers from low self-esteem is likely to create a delusion of grandiosity or adopts a contemptuous attitude to people. Someone who suffers from loss of meaning and purpose in life is likely to create a delusion of persecution. A thought of conspiracy gives meaning to someone who is experiencing meaninglessness. Acceptance of insignificance and meaninglessness can make us immune to developing some of these symptoms. A person who has withdrawn his interests from the outside world is likely to create a delusion of somatic dysfunction. The unhappiness with the outside world gets transferred onto one's own body. A person who has lost hope in life is likely to create a delusion of nihilism. It's very interesting to note here that the conscious and the unconscious mind work in perfect balance and sometimes compensate for each other's exaggerations. Our inability to accept the reality results in denials and exaggerations. The denials and exaggerations of the conscious mind are compensated by the opposite attitude arising from the unconscious mind. And if we look carefully, these compensatory mechanisms show themselves in the form of psychiatric symptoms. Sometimes hallucinatory experiences compensate for one's preoccupation with certain notions by creating just the opposite of what their conscious mind is saying to them. A reflection on the contents of one's hallucinatory experiences can support this hypothesis. There's another way of understanding hallucinations, and that is something that has been denied or suppressed in the unconscious mind in the past comes back in an exaggerated form. Something that the person can't accept. In psychotic states, it comes back in an exaggerated form, in the form of voices reminding the person of the reality of their existence. Helping clients find meaning in their hallucinations can be therapeutic. Moving to another existential issue, and that is the importance of relationships. Work of two existential thinkers is relevant here. According to Sartre, a French philosopher, hell is the other people, which means that when we relate to other human beings, we lose authenticity in our being, because at the end of the day, we are all alone, and eventually we have to face our destinies alone. Our loved ones, friends, and family will not be there to answer for us when we are confronting our destinies. In this respect, when we enter into an intimate interaction with others, we lose authenticity because there is a risk that our actions may not be in keeping with our own inner realities, as we are taking others' viewpoints into consideration and accommodating their existence into our psyche. A view opposite to this was held by philosopher Martin Buber, who saw sacredness in every human relationship. He described two different types of relationship: I-it and I-thou. I-it relationship is characterized by treating others as things and using them for one's selfish purposes, whereas I-thou relationship is about enjoying being with the other human beings without expecting anything from them. It may be that we lose authenticity when we enter into I-it relationship and gain authenticity by entering into I-thou relationship. Buber also talked about in-between relationships and described it as when I don't rob you of your space and you don't rob me of mine, a new, more open space between us is created. And in this, we can create interaction. I no longer have to strive to defend myself from being altered by you. I no longer have to aim for altering you. I can safely venture forward towards the new space that we inhabit together. And I can meet you there in order to weave a new world out of what we both have to offer. This is quoted in her book Everyday Mysteries by Amy Van Deurzen, an existential thinker and my teacher in London. Normally, we remain preoccupied with problems in relationships and interpersonal difficulties, forgetting that generally the relationships run much deeper than any problems that exist between individuals. Depression has been viewed in existential terms as a consequence of individuals' inability to come to terms with the unavoidable human pain. Paul Tillich, a psychotherapist, has explained it further by saying that a depressed person is more sensitive to these problems related to being a human being and so feels profound emotions. Whereas Viktor Frankl saw depression resulting from one's inability to discover or create meaning in their lives, or failure to come to terms with the feelings of meaninglessness that we normally encounter at times. In an existential sense, meaning is seen as a byproduct of one's engagement with this world, and a failure to engage with the world could result in depression. Heidegger, another philosopher, sees the crisis of meaninglessness unavoidable to some extent. He understood human beings as constantly being caught between two positions of no longer and not yet, which can lead to a loss of meaning, as whatever we have achieved becomes no longer, taking away all the meanings with it. We know that different things matter to us at different times, but the fact that they don't hang together as some unified whole takes away their meaning. Heidegger has also pointed out that technology has had an alienating influence on us, as it takes us away from ourselves. The same is true for people who watch too much of television. And there is scientific research that suggests that people who watch television more than a couple of hours a day are more stress prone because their attention is being diverted to outside all the time rather than being with oneself, which has some healing potential. In addition to this, the modern lifestyle has created its own stresses, as people have become more aware of what's happening elsewhere in the world, and as a result, It has increased the gap between what is and what should be there in their lives, and the internal tensions between who I am and who I think I ought to be. Another important aspect about depression is that it can result from one's inability to give up unattainable goals in relationships. It could be related to one's failure to elicit specific responses from specific people. The situation gets complicated when the alternatives to the expected response or behavior are not acceptable to the individual. Sometimes in relationships, depression can occur as a result of problems in distance regulation. The distance between two individuals should be optimal, like the strings of a guitar. Being too close or too far apart will not produce good music. Depression can cause disruption in one's daily routine and rhythms. Not eating enough and in time. Irregular sleep-wake cycle. Reduced physical activity and socialization. All this can make depression worse, setting off a vicious circle. Depressed individuals tend to withdraw from the outside world, which results in worsening in their depression. Increasing human contact and being more engaged with the outside world can be therapeutic. Whereas for anxiety disorder, the advice would be just the opposite, to reduce contact with the outside world. If you send 5 emails or make 10 phone calls a day, try to reduce the numbers, as it will reduce the demand on you until you are able to cope with the increased demand. Anxiety, unless it's due to genetic, hormonal, or other biological factors, generally starts as a genuine and appropriate response to a difficult life situation. And it can become a disorder when it persists even after the situation has become irrelevant. Another existential philosopher, Lacan, has talked about feelings of a lack, that something is lacking in life, irrespective of who we are and what we have achieved. According to him, all desires arise not from perception of the external world, but from an inner feeling of lack. This lack is not about lack of this or that, but about lack of being where the being exists. The being here refers to our own consciousness or true inner self. When it gets decentered, that is, a shift occurs in its focus from inside to the outside, it creates a feeling of a lack. This feeling of lack that Lacan talks about can't be filled with the achievements of the external world, and trying to do so would be a mistake. We find that at times we try to fill it with external achievements such as money, fame, house, modern gadgets. But after achieving all those, we still find that the lack is still there. And to deal with this lack, we move our goalposts further by creating new external goals and targets to be achieved. It becomes like a mirage or a bottomless pit that never fills. The solution to this problem is being centered in our being and working on the inside rather than the outside of ourselves. Finally, discussing stoicism or stoic calm. Stoicism is a branch of Greek philosophy founded in the early 3rd century BC. The Stoics believe that destructive emotions result from errors in judgment, and that A person of moral and intellectual perception would not suffer such emotions. One's happiness does not necessarily depend upon external circumstances, but on one's own virtues. And a virtuous person is immune to suffering. Stoicism teaches the development of fortitude as a means of overcoming destructive emotions, and that a Stoic of virtue would amend his will to suit the world and remain, in the words of Epictetus, sick and yet happy, in peril and yet happy, dying and yet happy, in exile and happy, in disgrace and happy. According to Stoicism, we are disturbed not by things, but by the views we take of them. And if one is unhappy, he is unhappy by reasons of himself alone. Outward things can't touch the soul, not in the least degree, nor have they admission to the soul, nor can they turn or move the soul, but the soul turns and moves itself alone. Let nature deal with matter, which is her own, as she pleases. Let us be cheerful and be brave in the face of everything, reflecting that it is nothing of our own that perishes. We are the souls and not the body and the mind. Nothing grows on the soul that can give you agony when it is torn away. We have so far discussed how philosophical and psychoanalytic understanding of the mind can help us deal with our stress better. In the next session, we'll review all the coping resources and the tools that have been discussed in this program so far. We'll also try to understand what heals in therapy and the avenues to inner peace. Thank you very much.